Okay, what's going on?
AudioToYou.com.
The home of quality podcasts.
Stay tuned to this channel.
Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi and welcome to episode 117 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from AudioToYou.com. With me on the line via Skype, once again, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
Hey, I'm really well. How are you?
Mate, 3 weeks in a row.
Look,
chalk it on the wall.
I reckon we should, actually. It's going to be... let the people at Guinness know that we've got another record.
Yes, exactly. And,
I'm sort of surprised myself. We came close, though, after last night's little fiasco with...
We did.
...stuck in town, we came close. But it's a good thing we both had tonight off, which is a bit sad, really, because it's Saturday night.
Yeah.
And we're not doing anything.
Well, I've just sat down and watched 2 episodes of Battlestar Galactica, so I don't know if that counts for anything.
My son loves Battlestar Galactica.
Does he?
Yes, he reckons it's a fracking good show. Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting that they are able to supplant that little word I there know. And still have it on normally TV. But yes,
I love the way how no other aspect of the English language has changed.
Yeah, that's right. Everything else is except they have a different word,
different adjective.
Yes, that's right. Is it a verb or an adjective? I think it can be anything on that show.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes. I was sitting here watching episodes with my son of Police Squad. Now, I don't know whether you've ever seen Police Squad, but you know the Naked Gun.
Yes, with Leslie Nielsen. Yep.
Well, this was the TV series that preempted the movies.
Oh,
so basically, they're half-hour episodes that are very much like the movies.
Right.
Sending up all the say are hilarious. We've got all the episodes on DVD.
Right, okay.
I was just watching, I looked at the clock and it was 1:01, and I thought, I've got an appointment with Mr. Williams. Here I am laughing my head off. I thought, well, I'd better go and open up Skype. So here I am.
Do you know what I really want to get hold of for Max? Because I remember loving it as a kid.
Yeah.
F-Troop.
Ah, F-Troop.
I reckon Max would love it.
Oh, that was a funny show.
It was a
that
great was a show.
Funny show. Yeah, the Indians on that were the funniest. They were really good. Good that the white men were made to look stupid for a change.
Yes. So, mate, what have you been up to this week?
Well, I did a shoot with a bride down in the ruins of... a model who was in a wedding dress.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting. Thank you. It was Glyn Lavender, who's an old friend of mine, who's on 5 Minute Photographer, and we're working together on a few projects. He has been posting these pictures up at 5 Minute Photographer on the forum there of these ruins, and I thought, I've never seen them. But he lives out the complete opposite end of town to me, so it's about 1.25-hour drive from where I live.
Right.
And it's pretty far, considering most of that is freeway. It's a fair way from me.
Right.
But we had to meet the other day to talk about some business plans we have. And then he said, okay, let's grab our cameras. I'd organized a model. I had a wedding dress. She was going to meet us down there. And basically, we did the shoot. And if you want to see the pictures, I can either email them to you and we can put them up at AudioToYou, or you can go to my blog.
I'm assuming you've got them either on your blog or on your Flickr site.
Yes, they're on both. They're on my Flickr site and my blog, so you can have a look at a couple of the results there.
Well, I'll put that in the show notes so people can link through to it.
Great. We had a great time. We did some off-camera flash work, which in these ruins was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I am going to go back on this coming Saturday with one of my favorite models that I've worked with, Soph, who I've worked with on my world. She's just so photogenic and has the greatest personality. She wants to do some corporate portraits, dressed in corporate gear. And I thought the contrast of her in the, the corporate outfit, the female corporate suit kind
business
of thing.
Business suit,
business suit with these ruins and some, really cool lighting would
would look
very
great.
Yeah, so that'll be this Saturday. And in between, I've got a cover shoot to do for a trade magazine. I've got to organize some workshops. I've got to get this next episode of Total Image up and running. There's a whole bunch to do, the sort of photography related and not photography related.
Yep.
And I've got to get a new video up at 5minutephotographer.com.
Mm-hmm.
New videos regularly going up on that, so video tutorials. So there's always something to do. Everybody wants a piece of the Mueller at the moment. you know, it's good. It works. Excellent. I don't mind it at all. I've had the opposite. I've had the times in my career, years past, where you sit and you twiddle your thumbs,
waiting for the phone to ring.
Watch Oprah, waiting for the phone to ring.
Yeah.
And then when it does ring, it's somebody wanting a bill paid. And you think, oh, that's not exactly what I was hoping for. I was on 3AW radio here in Melbourne the other day, and a lady rang through and said, look, my daughter's interested in starting up, a small business, getting into photography. What would you advise? And I said, oh, I'd advise her to find another job if she wants to eat. But no, I then told her I was only kidding and that it was a great job. And it is. And it really is... a fantastic job. It just takes a little bit of time, to get that up and running, basically.
I think, but like just about any business, it requires a hell of a lot of passion.
Yes.
I think to be great at any business, you absolutely have to have 110% of your heart in it.
Yeah, you do. There's actually, on the 5-Minute Photographer Forum, I was alerted to a video that was made by a photographer named Zach Arias. He's an American photographer. The Scott Kelby site, apparently. But I can also send you a link to this really great film that he's made.
Okay.
And it's all about why we do what we do.
Cool.
And it's you think as you're watching it, it's all very schlep rock, very doom and gloom, and why am I doing this, and my photography sucks, and I can't get my pictures right, and what's the point of it anyway? And it starts off very dark and dank and depressing, and then you listen, you have to wait right till the end, and then it just becomes suddenly very inspirational. And the link is well, I'll send you the link now.
Yeah, it's coming through. Okay,
and
beautiful.
Got it. Put that on the site, and it really is a very inspirational film. If you are feeling that you just don't get anywhere, you keep taking photographs, and you just don't seem to be getting anywhere, it really is a very good film, because basically he says, I know how you're feeling. I'm in the same place often. And then I get very busy with my work, and I'm not really about inspirational images. I'm just enjoying the fact that I can pay my rent with my camera. But there are times when I just feel that my photography is worth nothing. It's useless. And then he at the very end says, but, and you go, yes, this is what I remember. This is what photography is all about. And this is how I should feel. And on my forum, there's a fellow who related to the first part of the forum, of the video rather, where... Zach is saying, oh, my photography's terrible and I just can't seem to get anywhere. And that's all he basically related, connected with in this video. And I feel sorry for him, because at the very end it says, keep going, don't give up. Anyway, you guys watch it, because it really is very, very inspirational, and I got a lot from it. And it has had so many hits where it's been uploaded, and a lot of effect on struggling photographers earthwide, I think.
Awesome.
So make sure you watch it. It really is very, very good. Perhaps you can put the link up or something on Audio to You.
Definitely.
Bruce, but I'll leave that to you on your website. But I really, really enjoyed it, and suggest everybody watch it, especially if you are feeling a little bit creatively blocked, and we all get that from time to time.
Yeah, for sure. Now, just before we started recording, you and I were talking about the Victorian bushfires and what's been going on down there. You were saying that, like, I was aware that Richard Annable had made the very generous offer of being willing to go and shoot anybody's lost wedding photos over again at no charge. You were telling me that there are also some other photographers who are doing that.
Apparently, the ACMP are organizing photographers to replace family portraits.
Wow.
And so there are photographers who are putting their name forward to, I suppose, set up portable studios in the local town hall if it hasn't burned down.
Right.
Or wherever they can and help people to. And I know also that there are, groups of people who are getting together to... offer free restoration services for damaged photos, photos that were damaged by the fire, photos that were damaged by water, maybe in the firefighting, whatever the situation might be. If they are restorable, to scan them and restore them. There's all sorts of things happening that are from in the photographic, perspective, in the photographic arena here, that photographers are coming together to help these people. Because my family, my mum and dad, my two sisters all live in this very fire-prone area. my sister has already had her property, you know, attacked and lost some, you know, fences and a water tank. You know, acres and acres of land is just burnt. The fire came. The fire came within about 20 meters of her house and just stopped.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And so we've you know, had, my parents are actually staying here at the moment.
Right.
And they're, you know, because they don't want to hang around where there's the threat of fire and be anxious all the time. My parents are in their 60s and they don't want that. So basically, here's the thing. My parents, my mum particularly, has just packed up every conceivable photograph from our family history, put it in the boot of the car, grabbed some clothes, grabbed some other precious items, naturally documents of identification, passports, etc., and birth certificates, all those things, put them in the car and just staying at my place. And because, you know, but it's interesting that the greatest quantity, you know, in terms of square footage of things that she has is photographs. But, you know, really, as
she's
definitely
Shelton's mum.
Yeah, she does love her photography. And every single photograph I think she's ever taken is in the back of the car.
Right.
You know? And that's fantastic. But it, what does it remind us of? We always say, if our house was going to burn down, what would we grab?
Yeah.
And in the, you know, my mum has got these old photographs, so this is all analog, it's prints and it's negatives, you know. Now, of course, we have options to make sure that nothing happens to our photographs if we start preparing for whatever happens.
Yeah.
Now, in the digital age, there are websites that you can upload your photographs to offshore.
And that's,
you know,
the great thing. You know, that's what I love about the whole digital thing, is that it's so much easier to duplicate, you know, and not actually incur any loss in the information in the process.
Yes.
You know, analog, you know, if you lose your negs, then you're pretty much hosed. And, you know, if you've got hard copy prints, then okay, you can scan from those prints, but you're not going to get the same resolution that you had from your original neg.
Yes.
The beauty of digital is, you know, I can take my you know, .mrw raw files from my Konica Minolta, and I can upload those to a website, and I can, you know, if I lose my house, those photos are, you know, exactly the same as what I shot.
Yes. Yes.
That's awesome.
And there are a lot of websites that, you know, offer you 5 gigabyte free or 25 gigabyte free. And of course there's websites like carbonite.com where they charge, I think it's $49 a year. And you can upload, I think it's unlimited space.
Wow.
And which, I mean, if you think about what hard drives cost, $49 US per year is pretty cheap to upload all your photos off, you know, online, offshore somewhere or wherever the hell they are. They're an American company, I think. But what it does is actually when you install Carbonite, when you sign up to Carbonite, it installs a little program that runs in the background. And when you upgrade or update or change or add files, it automatically scans your computer and uploads all those according to what you've designated to carbonite.com. So if I go out and I do a shoot and I upload, you know, my shoot to my hard drive, the little program will, at some stage, usually it says when it's quiet, I don't know what that means.
Right.
But because I haven't signed up yet, but I'm certainly planning on it, we'll say, oh, look at this. We've got all these new pictures, and load them to this website without so much as a buy or leave. So you'll always have a backup somewhere of your shoot. I think that is a great idea. If this house burnt down right now, while I would lose a lot of precious things, I would always have my digital photographs somewhere else.
Yeah.
And, you know, the great thing is it's not on discs that can be burnt here. I could, of course, burn everything to disc and store it somewhere else. But in this, what we're finding, of course, is that discs are just too small these days.
Yeah.
I mean, a DVD is 7 gig or something.
Yep.
I go out with an 8 gig card these days. Look, so
within 2 years, we're going to have the ability to burn Blu-ray. But even still, you know, that's still only 50 gigs.
Yep.
And when you're shooting raw images out of a 24 megapixel digital SLR, you know, I dread to think what the file size is going to be. I know my camera is a 6.3 megapixel and the raw images are about 10 megs. So it would stand to reason that a 24 megapixel is going to produce around about a 40 megabyte raw file.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even 50 gigs isn't going to go far.
Yep. Yep, exactly. So we're going to have to find means by which we can store, you know, either on external hard drives, which we're already doing. But I think that, of course, will go in a fire or a flood or whatever will happen.
Yeah.
I think that we'll, you know, websites like Carbonite that are designed for this purpose and would therefore be secure and safe are ideal and a great choice for photographers to make. So not only would we be wise to make sure that we get our current photographs uploaded there, but what about scanning all our
old family? Scanning the old stuff, yep.
You know, just sitting there while we're doing something, maybe scanning the odd photo here and there, getting them scanned by somebody else, whatever we have to do. Find your most precious photographs. If they're old prints, old family prints, just flatbed scan those things anyway, yep. Because you know, you'll be surprised the quality that you can get out of scanning a flatbed. Mm. And make sure that they're somewhere else, you know. I mean, I haven't done it yet, so I'm the world's biggest hypocrite. But, you know, certainly it's a great idea,
yeah.
You know.
No, I've been thinking about it myself, just thinking yeah. That, you know, I've got all of this old, you know, all old prints and, you know, I don't have digital copies of them. And I must admit, it's just one of those tasks that you look at it and you go, that is just so big, I just don't even want to start.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to at some point.
You know, when people climb Everest, they know they're going to have to take it step by step. And, you know, those first few steps would probably be the hardest in the sense that, oh, look, am I really going to do this? This is so hard already.
Yeah.
But, you know, step by step, you chip away at it. If you scan one print a day by the end of the year, you've got 365 of your old photographs scanned.
That's right.
You know, most family albums that have come together will, you know, not contain that many pictures of your family history. Mm-hmm. What do you really need? You know, you can't scan everything, maybe, but you just do one or two a day, and you know, within weeks you've got a lot of it uploaded, saved to hard drive, saved off, you know, in some website somewhere. I think it's a really wise idea, and I know that when I mentioned this on 3AW Radio here in Melbourne last week when I was on air here, I got a lot of calls, people who knew about great websites, people who were asking me, you know, who and what, where and how, and, you know, talking about scanners they'd bought, what they were doing. So it really became the buzz here in Victoria, because the fires here have been horrendous. We've got over 200 people dead,
yeah.
And, you know, towns just leveled, just you know, beautiful towns like Little Marysville and King Lake, and towns where it looks like a post-Armageddon cataclysm.
Yeah.
And I've got some photographs up on my blog of what happened to my sister's property and properties around when I was there. And it just looks terrible. Empathize with all of those who've lost property and naturally those who've lost family and friends. But there's no need for us in this day and age to lose photographs.
No.
You know,
you
shouldn't.
It's funny because only yesterday, Friday, myself and one of the copywriters at work worked on a commercial for a company here in Sydney who do, you know, take your photos and your videos and will digitize them for you. Mm-hmm. And the commercial that we built actually came out so well, we're going to enter it into some awards because we honestly think we've got a good chance with this commercial. It came up so well.
Yeah.
But it's made me think, you know, maybe I should just go to them and say, here's all my photos, just scan them for me, you know, because, I mean, there are companies who will do it, you know, like this crowd that, you know, we made this ad for. There are other companies around and probably, you know, no matter where you live, you will find someone in business who will do all the hard yakka for you. So.
Yeah, yeah. Either way, you know, get it done. I think it's a really, really good idea. We don't need to lose photographs in this day and age.
No.
And you know, yeah. Either way, get it done. So yeah, that was basically the subject that you know, really interested everyone here. And you know, I know that if you live in California, for instance, I mean, that's a fire ravaged part of the world.
Yeah.
How many times has that, you know, has that been the case there? So I would suggest we just start doing it. I'm going to, you know, join up to Carbonite, I think,
right?
Having had a look at it, and also just because, you know, I lost a terabyte of hard drive. Yeah. You know, yeah. Well, you remember you and I talking about it. I still haven't been able to access that hard drive we were talking about months ago. So most of that stuff I'd backed up. But there's one wedding that still sits there that I'm trying to get hold of. And
did you get hold of Sven Dolef Mikkelsen?
Yeah, yeah, I did. And then a bit of a oscillator around here. And I've lost track of Sven because I had the crash of 2008, which was my C drive here.
Right.
So I've lost emails, I've lost a whole bunch of things. And I've sort of been a little bit concerned about contacting poor old Sven again because he was so good to me the first time around. I wonder whether I should bother him the second time.
Look, seriously, man, that guy has helped me out of the poop so many times and he is so generous about it. I mean, admittedly, I've made, you know, donations to his PayPal account whenever he has helped me out. He seriously does not mind. And if you need his contact details, I'll email it through to you again.
Well, I wouldn't mind, actually, because there is some stuff there I have to get.
Yeah,
and you tell me that he is the man to get it.
He is.
You know. Oh, well, then I'll do that. I know there are people in town such as Camera Clinic here in Easy Street in Collingwood and here in Melbourne.
There's a street called Easy Street?
Yeah, that's right. you live on Easy Street. They live and work on Easy Street, Camera Clinic. And they will, but it's going to cost me a grand or two to save my hard drive. Which, I would do that because if I can't get this wedding off this hard drive, then I have to refund the money and that's going to cost me more than it is to get the images. I'd rather
give
the customer pictures.
Well, mate, seriously, the last time Sven helped me out, I made a donation to his PayPal account of $100 US and he wrote to me and said, dude, you know, you didn't need to do that. For that money, you could have gone and bought the hard drive to duplicate the data that you temporarily lost.
Yeah.
Which was a perfectly valid point. And it's like, but you don't realize just how much it meant to me to get that data back. I'm happy to fork out $100 you know, for your expertise, which I don't have.
I would happily do the same.
Exactly.
You know, there's no point. You can't duplicate a hard drive that you can't actually access. So, yes, I'd love to have.
And you can't easily recreate the data that's currently, you know, in limbo.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
So yeah.
I appreciate that. These things happen. And look, I was stupid not to have found the time to back up that one wedding. But it was all happening. Everything was hitting the fan at the same time. And here you go. You know, this is another case of if I'd had something automatically backing this up, I wouldn't have this problem.
Yep.
So there are so many reasons why in this day and age we should not lose photographs.
For
and,
sure.
You know, here's me speaking from the situation that I'm in, having learned from my own stupid mistakes.
Yeah.
And now I have to find a way of fixing it, you know?
Yeah.
So, look, I'd love Sven's contact details.
I'll get it for you.
Anybody else who has any suggestions to help me save my terabyte, I would really, really appreciate it because I'd hate to go back to this couple and say, hey, guess what? Yes, I am a renowned photographer, but I'm also a complete idiot.
Have they not been hassling you saying, where are our photos?
Surprisingly not, no.
Wow.
But they will soon.
At some point,
Yes, at some point. So I'm going to have to definitely get stuck into that.
Mm.
Very nice people, but yeah, there you go. So it's just something that we've got to address. But you also said you received an email.
I had an email from a guy called Roy Booth through the week, and I'll read the email out. He said, "Hi guys, I'm just working my way through some of your older podcasts, but starting from the latest. Got to number 112 where you talk about the relationship of guide numbers, f-stops, and distance for flash. Now, I've come to photography fairly late after a brief dabble in the late 80s with a Yashica FR1 and don't have all the maths in my head. You state that f-stop is equal to guide number over distance in meters at ISO 100.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's all well and good, but the D300 has a base ISO of 200, not 100. And since I don't really want to shoot out of range if I can help it, I've either got to remove one stop from the aperture, since ISO 200 over 100 gives me one stop more, but is there a different formula given that f-stops aren't linear like speeds are? E.g., in your example, you have 28 for the guide number over 4 equals f7, rounded to f8, which is fine for ISO 100. For me, the same example would be 28 over f minus 1 stop equals f8 minus 1 stop equals f5.6. Is this really the best way of doing this, or is there a better way? And don't say shoot all your flash photos at ISO 100. Cheers, Roy. So I wrote back to Roy and said, no, look, it really just comes down to if you can calculate the f-stop for ISO 100, but you're shooting at ISO 200, which is one stop more sensitive to light, then you need to double the aperture, or in other words, halve the amount of light coming in. So if you had come to the calculation of requiring F7 for ISO 100, then you would need F14 at ISO 200. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that, Shelton?
No. No, it doesn't work that way, unfortunately, because Roy is... Yes, sorry, mate.
Okay. Well, enlighten me.
I know. Well, 200 is one stop faster than 100, right?
Yeah.
So he would either have to have a look at what the guide number for his flash is at ISO 200.
Well, he's saying his is a guide number of 28.
At 100, right? Yep. 200 being one stop faster, if he's going to do the math of it, let's say, for instance, that his flash is a guide number of 28 at 100 ISO in meters, and his subject is, four meters away, F7, or we'd round that out to F8. If he's using film or setting on his ISO on his digital that is one stop faster, which is 200, then he would actually just go from F8 to F11.
Ah, of course.
Yeah, not F14. That's where you've got to be very, very careful. Yeah,
of course, of course.
So it really is just a matter of just saying, well, 200 is one stop, 400 is two stops, 800 is three stops. So he'd go 8, 11, 16, 22, 32. Yeah. And remember that in your terms of your f-stops, you would, if you don't know what a full stop of light is, you just multiply the f-stop by 1.4. So the difference between 5.6 and 8 is multiplied by 1.4. 8 and 11 is multiplied by 1.4, approximately.
Ah, okay.
So, and it's all got to do with how they work out these optical laws and la la la. So, yeah, at ISO 200, it would be F11, 400, F16, and 800, etc. And you work it back the other way, of course. So at 100, it would be F8. At 50, it would be 5.6. At 25, it would be 4, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
So that would be how it works. So, Roy, I see from your email, because Bruce has just forwarded it to me in Skype, that you're a Pommy Nikonian or Nikonian. Very, very good on you, Roy. Thanks, mate. I hope that answers your question. You got to remember that Bruce is the compere of this show, but I am the genius.
Yes, as has just been proven. I can't believe I actually fell for that. I should have realized that.
Right.
But anyway, there you go.
That's all right. That's just the way it works. No, that's fine. So do I need to email Roy now and say, don't listen to that Bruce Williams play?
Don't listen to him. He's an idiot. Actually, no, it's probably not a bad idea. Either you or I can write back to him and let him know, because...
I might be a little bit scathing if I email him back. So you might, and hopefully, of course, he'll listen to this.
Of course, he will.
Podcast and say, "Oh, that bloody Bruce Williams! Fancy him telling me all that rubbish! I'll never bloody trust him again." Bloody. Who does he think he is? Bloody Michael Parkinson. No. So.
Well, thank you for sitting straight on that one, mate. That's great.
No, that's fine. That's fine. But look, on the subject of off-camera flash, there are some other ways to do it. If your flash has a thyristor mode, in other words, a mode by which you set it on automatic, you choose an aperture according to the ISO, and the sensor on the flash tells the flash, when to how much light to emit, when to stop the exposure, etc. You can also use those settings. You can set your flash on automatic and the flash will look at the subject and judge the distance, etc. It's not always accurate, but there's possibly easier ways of doing the math. However, look, to be honest, the math is not that hard. Once you've understood, the basic tenets of it, you can really work out how to set your flash up on manual. And I think it's a great way to work. I mean, I don't, because I have the Nikon CLS system, and it really is fantastic for off-camera flash and strobist stuff. But if you are using, a camera that doesn't have that facility, then working with a generic $20 flash you buy down at the secondhand pawn shop or wherever you get it, and doing the whole thing mechanically, manually, working out the math, it's a way you can't really go wrong. And, of course, working with digital... If you do see that you've blown something out or it's not bright enough or whatever, you just simply know to move the flash back and forward Or this is what happens when we record at 20 to 10 at night. move the flash back and forward, or open your f-stop up and down. So there's ways of getting around that. It actually is not that simple at all.
I actually think there's a lot to be said for doing it manually for a while, just to get your head into that, you know, thinking about it and not just relying on the technology all of the time.
Technology is a great thing, but in so many ways, I believe that the digital era, as advantageous as it has been to photographers, is also disadvantageous to neophytes within the industry.
It dumbs us down.
Absolutely. In my day, lad, you tell the young people that today, and they won't believe you. But in, you know, when my first camera was a Minolta SRT 101, and it had an inbuilt meter, but that was basically it. You know, you had to match the little circle with the needle, and that was your exposure. And you had to set your exposures and, you know, focus manually. I mean, that was 1979, and the camera was 12 years old when I got it. I was 17, and it was all the money I had. But I loved that camera, and it produced images I absolutely still love to this day that I'm proud of. But I'll tell you what, working with that camera, boy, did it teach me a thing or two. And I had to learn this stuff. And the thing is, even though we're digital, we still have to learn this stuff. I was running a workshop last Saturday, a creative people photography workshop at Montsalvat here in Melbourne. And there was a girl there, and I've a good friend of mine. I've known her since she was a little girl. And she's taken up photography, and she came to the workshop, and she was photographing this model in the available light, and she's saying, oh, look, you know, you told me to put it on manual, but look at this, it's too dark, or it's too bright or something. And I said, well, just, you know, fix it. And she looked at me and she said, how? Yeah. And I said, well, manually change your shutter speed or your aperture. And she showed me her camera and said, how do I do that? So she didn't know how to change her shutter speed or how to change her aperture. But yet, if you look at her photography, when she's got the camera set on aperture priority or shutter priority or program, which is, I think, the mode she works in most of the time, she produces beautiful work.
Right.
She's got this great pre-visualization whereby she can then take it into Photoshop and really make this stuff beautiful. But the satisfaction of using the camera as a tool the way that it should be used, and also, you know, the hit and miss nature of automation in cameras, I think she's really missing out on not being able to know how to set her camera manually. And it freaked me right out that I've known her all this time. Here she was on my workshop, and she didn't know how to set her shutter speed, and she didn't know which way to go.
Wow.
Fast or slower. So, and I don't think she's alone in that. I think so many people pick up their cameras, put it on P for professional, and shoot away. And it's really just, it's so disadvantageous to the photographer. And that's why you're absolutely right. When Roy talks about, you know, setting up the flash manually, I've had a similar question on my 5-Minute Photographer forum recently. You know, once you've got an understanding of these things in principle, no matter what camera you pick up, you are able to use it, because as long as you know where the shutter speeds are, as long as you know where the apertures are and where the focusing ring is, you can pick up and use any camera. And that is, if you've got the latest, you know, D700 or 5D Mark II or Sony A900 or whatever you've got, or D90, whatever you've bought yourself, I just suggest that the first thing you do is set it manually and frustrate the hell out of yourself for the first week or two. But once you've got the handle on it, you will never, ever, ever look back. You'll use your automation modes, but there'll be this inner satisfaction of saying, you know what? I could do this manually. Yeah. Whereas the other way around, you can't actually say that, and you don't get the same satisfaction. You actually, there's a little voice inside you saying, boy, if I was in trouble here, if my camera didn't know what it was doing, I seriously wouldn't know what the hell to do.
Yeah, and that's the bit I hate is, you know, being in a situation like that where you know that, you know, there might be a way of doing it manually, but not having the knowledge of, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't necessarily have to be photography, but, you know, not having that knowledge to say, well, the technology's failed me in its automatic mode, but I don't have the knowledge to go to manual mode and do it myself.
Yeah. So what if, like you say, you're in a situation and the camera is just not cooperating because it's some weird lighting situation or whatever it might be? Well, what are you going to do? Well, this girl on my workshop did not have a clue what she was going to do. And unfortunately, I had other people to take care of. And this was not a lesson about how to use your camera. This was a lesson about how to use and pose people in light and meter for the light, etc. So I just said, I'm going to have to get back to you, you know, and show you where your shutter speeds and apertures are. But she looked at me dumbly as if to say, well, even when you do that, which way do I go? Left or right? Up or down? But, you know, and it was not that kind of a lesson. So she missed out on that, and I'll have to get back to her, and you know, I'll have to pop around to her place and, you know, give her a bit of a lesson on how to, on shutter speeds and apertures. But now that she's at 5minutephotographer.com and she's a member there, hopefully she'll watch a couple of the videos there that explain that and, you know, and get a handle on it. But I really felt sorry for her because I could see this look of frustration on her face. And I know that when she shoots, she's basically saying, thank God. And I wouldn't ever want to be in a situation in photography whereby I couldn't fix it. I couldn't say, well, I know exactly what I'm going to do here. And set. And the other great thing about knowing your camera and knowing how to set it manually means that you really know how to make really cool off-camera flash techniques. You really know how to meter for a scene and pre-visualize the end result according to how you've set the camera's exposure mechanisms.
Yeah.
You know, case in point, that shoot that I did out at the ruins. I knew that if I wanted this particular effect, I had to set the camera on manual, underexpose the scene, let the flash, you know, do its thing, and work the light that way. Glenn Lavender, who was on the shoot with me, an old friend of mine, with whom, as I said, I'd had a meeting and we're going to do some business together. He said we were waiting for the model to arrive, and we were just in the parking lot near this ruin, just parked off the road there. And he said, so how do you do this, Shelton? And I told him, and he got his camera out, and we, you know, I will never let him do that again because he posted the pictures on 5 Minute Photographer. these experimental photos of me where I'm just fooling around in front of the camera. And he got it, you know, because he knew how to set his camera up. And once I'd explained it to him in principle, he just got it. And he was able to work that whole shoot manually with the flash being the primary light source if he wanted it to, or a fill light source if he wanted it to. And because he understood the relationship between the flash, the guide number, the aperture, the shutter speed, what the meter said, what his gut said, he knew all of those things within an instant because he understood the principles. He had a really great shoot. So if you've just bought yourself a camera, or you haven't actually taken the camera off P or S or A or TV or whatever it is on, you haven't put it on M yet, I tell you what, just go down to the beach, go to your local park, do whatever, set your camera on manual and learn how to do that. And then grab yourself a flash and learn how to do that as well.
Yep, absolutely. And I would say, and I know that I am the exception to the rule in this, but I love sitting down with a new gadget and actually having the manual for it beside me.
Yeah.
I don't always read every single page, but I love having it there. And if I can't work a function out, then just, you know, flicking through the book, finding that function, go, so that's how that bit works.
Yeah.
And I would highly recommend that, even if you're not the sort of person that normally reads a manual, it's handy to just have it close by, particularly if your camera is new to you.
Yes, I hate reading manuals, and the thing about manuals is that they're never written by guys who actually do these things.
Right.
You know, they're written by the guys in the white coats, and I must admit, when I got my D700, the great thing about Nikons to me is that they're very intuitive. You pick one up and you pick another one up, and they're exactly the same. and that's what I love about them. The buttons are all the same. The, you know, the ISO setting is the shutter speed dial, and you pick it up and it's familiar, it's an old friend. But there were aspects to it that I didn't know, so I went to Ken Rockwell's site.
Right.
And just went through, you know, why you should set your D700 up this way, or why you might want to do it this way or that way. And I just went through his site and set my D7 up along many of the recommendations that he made. Some I didn't agree with and some I did. But at least he said, look, if you wanted this effect, or if this is, you know, this will do this, this and this, and this is why you'd have this, and explain it in principle. And I went, oh, bing, and I got it. And I understood it. But yes, for me, it wasn't the instruction manual, but it was someone telling me, look, the camera will do this, 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 and this. And that's why these settings are in there for these circumstances. So that now, in principle, I know what that thing in the menu is all about, or I know what that thing on the back of the camera is all about in principle. And that's where so many newcomers to photography are not learning. They're getting the specifics of digital, or, you know, and they're using things like scene modes, landscape mode, portrait mode, you know, off flash mode, night mode, but they don't know why you set the camera. What when you put the camera on portrait mode, what does it do? Oh, I don't know, but, you know, it sure takes nice portraits. Well, you should know. Because what the test would be now to go down to an old secondhand store, buy a 40-year-old, 30-year-old camera, put a roll of film in it, and see if you know how to use it. one of the most satisfying things I did in 2002, I went to Vietnam.
Yep.
And I had film cameras then still. I hadn't gone digital by this stage because I wasn't quite happy yet. I think it was 2003 I finally went digital.
Right.
I had my Nikons. I had an F90X and I had a couple of others, and they were autofocus and la la la. But I was at this photography swap meet, and I think I might have mentioned this on the podcast before. There was an old Petri rangefinder there.
Right.
And it was in mint condition. And it had a leather case, and it was gorgeous. Picked it up, had a bit of a play, made sure that everything worked, and it just worked beautifully. It was made in 1954, I think it was, and it still had the original instruction manual, everything. Oh, it was awesome. So anyway, I bought this camera because I knew that I was heading off to Vietnam, and, you know, and I said to myself, you know what I really want to do? I want to return to my roots. I want to return to when I was 15 years old and learning photography at high school. And I want a camera that won't do a damn thing for me.
Yeah.
And this camera does nothing for you. It doesn't have a built-in meter. It doesn't. It has rangefinder focusing. It has one lens, a 45 millimeter f/2.8 lens, sharp. And it has shutter speeds and apertures. But you have to set everything, and you have to gut meter. You have to look at a scene, and you have to do the Sunny 16 rule and gut meter. So I loaded it with black and white film, and I wandered around Vietnam. Of course, I took my other cameras with me too, and they were loaded with color tranny. But I put some black and white film in this old Petri. And there were mornings when I thought, I just swallowed hard and I got up and I just grabbed this camera, no other camera. And I just walked through Hanoi and Saigon and these little towns with just this camera and forced myself to go back to my roots. And boy, was it satisfying, Bruce. It was so, so satisfying because, A, I remembered how to do it after all those years.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it had been 20 years since I'd put myself in that situation. And so I remembered how to do it. And then when the photographs came back, they were so satisfying because it was all me.
Yeah.
It was all me. And there's something to say about that. There's something to say for that, that it is so satisfying. And that's where I felt for my young friend, because she can't say that. Yeah. You know, she really can't say that it's all me. If the camera's doing a lot of the work for you, and some would argue, oh, yes, but it's only handling the scientific aspect, not the creative aspect. Or that it's handling the technological aspect, shutter speeds, apertures, exposure, focus. No, that's not true. That is not true. Exposure is a creative tool as well as a
scientific function.
Scientific function, you know? And you can look at a scene and say, I want to do this, 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 and this because I underexpose or overexpose or whatever I'm going to do, or meter for this section and not this section. Exposure metering is creative. And the moment we think it isn't, we're missing out on half the fun and half the creativity of using a camera.
Yeah.
And I really felt for her. So may we just sign off on this podcast by saying, if you haven't got your camera out and taken some photographs in some window-lit room using purely manual exposure, if you haven't got your flash with a cheap Chinese trigger manual and gone out and had a bash at it, do so. When your pictures come back, when you put them up on your screen and you have a look, let me tell you this, the smile you have will be twice as big because it's all you, baby.
Yep.
It's all you.
Yep, absolutely. Wonderful. Thank you very much, Shelton.
My pleasure. Absolutely. That's number three, Bruce.
Yes.
Number three. I didn't work out. And let me just ask you this before we leave.
Right.
You forwarded me an email about the introduction to last week's show that one of our listeners had a giggle about. Do you remember that? I know. I'm sorry.
No, I don't remember. And I don't have access to the email on this particular computer that I'm sitting at, so...
I'm desperately looking through my hundreds of emails here to see if I can find it. Okay. Well, maybe we can... If you are the sender of this email to which I refer, forgive us, but it is here somewhere in my email that someone got a kick out of the way we introduced our last week's show.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It's coming back to me now. I don't remember who it was, but they said something or other about... It was just great to hear the rapport and the way we bounced off it and each other, and that there was no way that could have been rehearsed.
Okay.
Well, yes, I would just like to say for the record that Shelton and I have never rehearsed anything that we've ever done on this podcast.
You can tell that.
Exactly.
Well, these truths are self-evident. Yeah.
I mean, yes, I mean, it's true that we sometimes have a little bit of a chat before I actually start recording the body of the podcast, but we don't actually rehearse any gags or any, you know, back and forth interplay or anything like that. So, yeah, I would hope that it sounded natural, because it always has been that way. So, yeah.
That is right, Bruce. And may I just say at this... Hang on, what's that word? May I just say at this juncture that... No, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And I hope that this is what you're continuing to enjoy. I mean, absolutely. We do establish a couple of subjects before we start the show, but often things move into areas of discussion that we understand people are interested in. Yeah. And here, and may I say once again, now that we're back on the air, now that we're back doing this, we really do love your input. So keep sending us those questions, because we want to know what you want to know.
Absolutely. All right, mate. Well, I will talk with you next week.
You bet, mate. You bet. And we'll catch up. We'll catch up very soon. By the way, remember, I'm coming to Sydney. So.
When is that?
Well, not for a couple of months, but that's the right. For the expo. Yes. And so we'll have to catch up then. But definitely. Anybody who's planning on being at PMA Expo in Sydney this year, come by our stand. You know, come. We'll talk about maybe the times and dates for the show next week.
Yep.
If you're a Sydney listener, or if you're an Australian listener, hey, if you're an overseas listener, Sydney's a beautiful, beautiful town. We got that big funny shaped building that looks like a bunch of dishes in the sink, mm-hmm. you know, on the harbour there. And we've got the big coat hanger that goes over the harbour there. We got some lovely stuff in Sydney. So, you know, make sure you come over and say good day.
Absolutely. And just a reminder, if you do want to send us emails, it's studio@audiotu.com or shelton@audiotu.com.
Yep.
And we'll talk with you next week.
Fantastic. Good on you, Bruce.
See you, mate.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.